5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, Director of Content for WorkinSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. Vegas, baby! I've said these words many, many times prior to boarding a flight for the Oasis in the desert. Visiting with friends, visiting family, heck, I even got married there. Nope, not some drive-through Elvis Chapel. The real deal, top floor of the Mandalay Bay, looking down the strip. I love Vegas. But I'll be honest, I never ever thought any sport outside of boxing and MMA would thrive there. Those are events people go to be seen, hot tickets. And that's Vegas in a nutshell. Mike Tyson fight? Heck yeah, bring it to Vegas, roll out the red carpets. Or as Iron Mike would do, cut a hole through the middle of a hotel towel and drape it over himself so that he looked like a completely unhinged badass. Seriously, for all of you who think of Mike Tyson as just the guy from The Hangover, come on. He was the baddest man on the planet for a real long time. All right, I'm getting off track. My point is this. I never believed Vegas could support a day-in, day-out team. An 82 games in a season, practice daily, win some, lose some team. I just didn't see it. There are communities in Las Vegas full of families and schools and kids and water parks. But those locals tend to avoid the strip, and that is where T-Mobile Arena, the house of the Vegas Golden Knights, is located. When the Knights announced their existence, my first thought was, this is going to be awful. Hockey in the desert hasn't done well. The locals in Las Vegas don't go to the strip, and there just isn't enough interest from tourists to go see a hockey game when they can do so many other things. Think about it. If you're a tourist from Minnesota going to Las Vegas in the winter to get some sun, are you going to see a hockey game? No, I don't think so. You're going to be poolside at the Hard Rock for a few days getting your pasty white arse a little sun. To me, the equation of a locally supported season ticket holder group plus tourist interest in day of game events just wasn't adding up. So far, I have been miserably wrong. Now, before you say success changes everything, wait until they lose, they've been on a hot streak, they went to the Stanley Cup Finals, there was a buzz about them, you need to remember that before they even dropped a puck, they had sold 13,000 season tickets for an arena that holds 17,500. That's 74% capacity sold for the season, guaranteed, before they even made any calls for group sales, individual game sales, premium seating. They were netting a hat trick before the ice even got cold. Why? Why did this work so well? Well, there was a fan base that was clearly starved for a team and an aggressive marketing strategy that former guest on the show, Lee Steinberg, called a miracle on and off the ice. I would really want to learn how they did this. What was the secret sauce? How did they get such global interest in a hockey team in Las Vegas? Who better to learn about this successful strategy from than Vegas Golden Knights Chief Marketing Officer Brian Killingsworth, who after 10 years with the Tampa Bay Rays and then multiple years in the NFL with both the Rams and the Buccaneers, took his talents to Vegas, baby. Here's Brian Killingsworth, Chief Marketing Officer for the Vegas Golden Knights. Hi, Brian. How are you doing today?
I'm doing real well.
Thanks a lot for coming on the show. You're right in the middle of your season. Well, I mean, you're starting off your season, which is an exciting time for you. So I appreciate you taking a little extra time to talk about your career and what's going on in Vegas. For you personally, you've worked in various marketing roles in Major League Baseball, the NFL, and now into the NHL. How, for you, has the approach to marketing changed in different sports and with different target audiences?
You know, that's a great question. And with my career, you know, starting out in baseball for about 10 years and then the NFL for five and now in NHL with the Golden Knights, it's everybody expects that that the marketing aspect has changed from sport to sport. But at the end of the day, you're trying to generate awareness of the team. You're trying to drive value to the brand, and you're trying to drive revenue. And so from my perspective, it's been great learning about the nuances of each individual sport and each individual franchise. Seasons are different in terms of length, with the baseball being the longest and kind of hockey somewhere in between football and baseball. So for me, it's really just moving on from sport to sport, but at the end of the day, the core principles of marketing have remained the same.
Which makes perfect sense, but in your world, I mean, you've changed sports, but you're also in a first-of-its-kind location. I mean, you spent so many years in Tampa Bay with the Rays and with the Buccaneers. How much is it different to be in a place like Vegas? I mean, it's got to be different from a perspective of what you can do and how you can display your brand. Does it change much being in a location like Vegas?
Without a doubt. I mean, the Vegas aspect has changed significantly. I mean, I'm a big believer in trying to step out of your comfort zone when appropriate. And so I had spent some time in St. Louis. Obviously, I'm from Tampa and spent time with two teams there at the professional level. So I knew that market front to back. But my time in St. Louis, I had to adapt and really learn that market, which allowed me the opportunity to be more nimble and flexible when I got to Vegas. But really learning about what the magnitude of Vegas is was really something that each day I'm blown away with, because a lot of people think it's just the Strip, but this is a unique, really loving community that people don't see when they just fly in for a conference or for a weekend, that they just stay on the Strip. There's places like Henderson and Summerlin that are beautiful communities where families raise their kids, and there's churches and parks, and it's just a beautiful area to live. And I got to figure out what that meant here in Vegas with 2.2 million people here. But then you also have the fact that 43 million tourists come here every year as well. So it's this great dynamic where you're blending the community feel of what Vegas is with the international global appeal of what the city is as well.
It's so true. I have family in the Las Vegas area, matter of fact, in Henderson, like you mentioned. And from years of visiting them, I was never sure. I'm just saying, as someone who worked in the sports media for over 20 years now, I was never sure a pro sports team would really work in a transient community. And I thought it would be hard to get season ticket holders with so many other distractions. You know, could you get walk-up tickets? Could you get those day of purchases? And boy, was I wrong. What was the key to engaging that community and getting them to support the Knights and come out on a day-to-day basis?
You know, a lot of that happened before I got here. I was not in the market at the time, but they had a season ticket drive that immediately generated over 14,000 deposits. Was there from the start. This community really was hungry for a major professional sports franchise, and they showed that with the inaugural ticket drive, which resulted in incredible results. Out of those 14,000, almost 12,000 converted to full season tickets, which made up about 85% of our overall base. So if you actually take a step back and realize that, I think a lot of people thought Vegas was just going to be a market, if a sports team ever entered it at the professional level, that had to be built upon the tourists. And that's actually the opposite of what we are. We have built this to be sustainable over time. It's 85% local in terms of our season ticket base. And without that local support, we never would have gotten off on the right footing that we had last year.
I don't think anybody's expected the success that you guys had last year. I would think from a marketing perspective where, you know, you're in Vegas, you can turn up the dial a little bit, but then as you get into the Stanley Cup playoffs and in the Stanley Cup finals, was that almost like this great moment where you could really turn up the dial and say, this is who we are, this is our brand, and this is how we want to represent who we are in the future? Was that an opportunity to almost show off in a bit on such an international level of exposure?
Yeah. It's interesting because this is a great case study if you actually take a look at building an organization from scratch and how Bill Foley, our owner, picked two leaders both on the hockey side and on the business side, being George McPhee on the hockey side and Kerry Buchholz on the business side, that have no ego approaches and that have come from other teams and really have learned how to architect this the right way. And I think what's really unique is when we launched into the market, we launched with a campaign that was Vegas born. That was our way of kind of launching in the market through billboards and media, you know, teams have campaigns, they have slogans every year. We wanted to really put our foots, our stamp in the ground in terms of what were we all about. We are proud of the fact we're Vegas's first major professional sports franchise, and the community celebrates with us in terms of us really being born here. And right away, our players got behind it. The community got behind it. We started seeing Vegas Born posters coming to games. And there was this great connection point between just a simple mantra like that, that families here in Vegas really supported and were proud to wear our logo and proud of the fact that we're Vegas Born. Because, you know, they're now raising their families and many of their kids are Vegas Born. Or they might be from another area, but now they feel like Vegas is their hometown and they want to support it as much as possible. But after we launched that, we started noticing, obviously, the way the team played on the ice, and right from the start, the incredible success the team had, and they took on a persona of this Golden Misfits mentality, which is basically playing for every other player that was exposed or released from their team. So it was this great play that each of our guys were fighting for whoever the team was playing that night and for the player that got released by that team. And so there was this really neat dynamic that was happening with our players with a no-ego approach, with a no-captain approach. And then we started to build the Vegas Born over time. And then when the playoffs hit, probably the watershed moment for me is when I got a stat back from Fanatics telling us that fans in 100 different countries had purchased Vegas Golden Knights gear.
Wow.
And then we knew we had this international stage, as you said. So how did we capitalize on that? And that was our focus, is kind of shifting gears of definitely hyper-local. We'll always be local, and our season ticket members are our bread and butter. But we've got this incredible, appealing brand that is world people are excited about connecting with. A lot of fans from all over the world really love the underdog mentality. They were attracted by our logo and our uniforms and just everything about that. So we had this great window to try to maximize that as much as possible. And we did some fun things with some of our merchandise and retail and some of our social strategies, where we basically asked Game of the Kings series where they were watching the playoff game. And we got these incredible responses all across the globe from Germany and Sweden and Japan. And, you know, we went so far as to ship shirts all across the globe that said, "I'm from blank, but I cheer for the Golden Knights," and encourage people to write in where they're from. And so we definitely did a couple things to really maximize on that exposure. And, you know, we're trying to really global profile.
Well, I will tell you that I live outside of Philadelphia and my kids all have Vegas Knights t-shirts. So, we're part of your crew, I guess. Let's talk about you.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Oh, they do. It's a great logo. It's a great team. I think everybody's rallied behind it. Let's talk about you personally. As chief marketing officer, you have great influence on the brand. While I know no 2 days are the same in sports, how would you quantify your main responsibilities?
I was hired here by our owner, Bill Foley, and to really help start the brand. And really anything that has our brand goes through through myself and our group here. And so that's kind of how I look at it. Even bigger than that, Bill owns a number of different portfolios on the wine side. He has a Foley wine portfolio of 19 across the globe, and Rock Creek Cattle Company is one of his marquee properties. And so another aspect of my job is to connect the dots and find ways to sync up the Vegas Golden Knights fan base with customers of Foley Wine Side and also people that visit Rock Creek Cattle Company and members of that beautiful. So that's kind of a unique cross-platform opportunity that I have. But really, from a day-to-day standpoint, it's working with our communications and content team, our events team, our digital and social teams, our marketing team, our analytics team, and really our fan development team. And that's from a day-to-day basis, we're just trying to grow the brand as much as possible.
It sounds like you have both a creative side and an analytical data side. Do you have a certain side that you enjoy digging your fingers into the most?
You know, I love going back and forth. I think that's the challenge for me is trying to live left brain, right brain at the same time, because I do have the creative side is really appealing to me, because I love the aspect of creating something from scratch and then launching it and really gauging the reaction and drive revenue. And so that from that perspective, whether it's a design on a billboard or a promotional item or an advertising campaign or a radio spot, I'm really still a core responsibility of mine that I really enjoy. And but then there's also the aspect that the data drives decisions. And so for me, it's, you know, how can we make subtle tweaks to be even more efficient and generate even more revenue? And so on that side of it, that's always very interesting to me, where we can drill down and really get into the finite numbers on how we can actually make incremental gains. And so I like going back and forth between the two. But for me, I'm just incredibly blessed to be part of this organization with such a really strong brand out of the gate.
What about your beginning? You're the CMO now. You're top of the heap in a lot of different ways for somebody who wants to pursue a marketing career. But you started out at the beginning at some point. You were at the Tampa Bay Rays and spent over a decade there. In your early years, what did you do to not only gain experience, but kind of gain respect around the Rays organization? How did you prove yourself in your early days, which helped get you to where you are now?
So I got a communications undergrad from Flagler College, and then I went on to get an MBA at University of South Florida. And it was because of the opportunity that opened doors for the Tampa Bay Rays. I actually did a group project on how to drive more attendance for college students at Rays games, and got a chance to present that to upper management at the time, and just thought that was a great opportunity. I got a call once I graduated, about a month after I graduated, from one of those that I presented to, and he said that, hey, we've got this entry-level position that's running baseball camps for the Rays. Would you like to be considered? I said, absolutely. So I had a chance to help. So I started as the coordinator of amateur baseball programs for the Rays. And for me, so I had a chance to really start and really grow something from scratch there. And I think that experience that early in my career really helped me, because it wasn't just an operational role. It was a line of business. And so I got a chance to interact with all different I got to run my own P&L. I got to really grow it, do the own advertising, but then also the operational part. So right away, even though it was a small line of business for the organization as a whole, it allowed me the opportunity to learn on the macro level different aspects of the business. And so I jumped right in at that opportunity and helped grow the camps and the revenue from that perspective and the awareness of that. And I've always had a passion for kids and using sports to help develop some of the characteristics that they need to grow in their lives from a character development perspective. And so for me, it was a dream come true to work for hometown team and running baseball camps. And, you know, 10 years, I think one of the things that that maybe separated me is I was always willing to take on more roles. I kind of pride myself in my work ethic, and so just finding other projects that maybe people would always do my work, but I'd make relationships with other people around the building and see if there were any other projects that I could look into, whether it was on the baseball ops side or if it was in other areas. So I got to learn all aspects of that organization in a short period of time. And, you know, then it comes to just being at the right place at the right time and working your tail off, and opportunities arise. So I was really, really blessed to kind of grow my career through that organization in a short period of time, eventually ending up as the senior director of marketing, advertising, and promotions for the Rays. And so I had some great times there. And I think it challenged me, because when there were lean years on the field, I had to get more creative with those in my department about how we really drive ticket sales. And so it allowed me to really learn and really driving specific nights and really marketing the experience over specific players. And so those lean years actually really helped me really carve my craft the right way. And that was very beneficial for me.
No, it makes a lot of sense. It's easy to sell tickets when LeBron James comes to your team. It's a lot harder when, you know, times are harder and you're not winning as much or there isn't as much buzz. So you really have to learn how to be really strong at the fundamentals of marketing and sales. What about now? What do you look for in people to know they have what it takes, that little it factor to work in the sports industry, specifically in marketing? Are there certain attributes that you look for when you're hiring?
I can always look at somebody's resume, and that's one thing. Everybody can put together a good resume. I mean, obviously, you have to have the building blocks, you know, and the core tenets and interviewing for the position on paper. But to me, it's really the interaction, whether it's on the phone or in person. It's really that interaction. I really am looking for somebody who can communicate well, somebody who writes well, but somebody who follows up and goes out of their way and above and beyond. And what I mean by that is, you know, I get a lot of people emailing me about internship opportunities and you know, as an organization that's been so successful that as we have, you know, you're going to get that. And we love those. And we answer every single one, and we've got a process for internships. And, but for me, I've been talking to, students as they're getting ready to enter the job force. It's really about how do you stand out in terms of networking and also, you know, following through with what you're looking to do as a whole. And so what I mean by that is, I've asked different students that have kind of approached me on job opportunities, and I say one thing that you might think of, instead of just sending your resume to an executive at an organization with a little, you know, cover letter, you know, we get thousands of those throughout the year. Why don't you actually take time to actually research an emerging trend or something that you're interested or passionate about and do a little research project on that? You know, I give, you know, teams are always looking into esports, right? Is it a viable opportunity now if you look at that from a cost benefit analysis? And, you know, a lot of us don't have dedicated esports divisions within our departments or within our organizations at the sports level, but we all know that this is an emerging, an incredibly emerging hot space that a lot of teams are buying other franchises and also getting incremental dollars from. So this is an example of something that I personally probably don't have the time to research as much and as thorough as I'd like to. But if somebody was looking to stand out, they would do the research on this as a whole, then they'd send it in, throw in your resume. You know, it might sit on the desk. It might give that person some new talking points. Somebody like myself could learn a little bit by reading your report and learn a little bit more about the industry, and it'll help you stand out. And then you become that subject matter expert in the eyes of the senior level executive. And who knows what could come out of that. But that's just one way where I would suggest somebody who's looking to break in just to stand out from the pack.
I think that's great advice, and now I'm wondering how many people in our audience are going to deliver that report to you. I'll be curious to hear if anybody does. As you look to the future, you talked about esports. There's so many new emerging technologies and approaches that have a role in marketing, from laser-focused demographics and targeted campaigns to artificial reality. What do you think is the next great approach or tool to enhance a sports team's marketing efforts? Is there something coming on the future that you're looking forward to toying around with a little bit?
You know, I'm still big on content. I think content is the new advertising. And for me, it's interesting because you look at the standard marketing mix that marketers, whether they're on the brand side or on the sports side, have used all throughout the years to great success. But some of those aren't as successful as they once were. And so you look at how you're allocating your resources, and you know, everybody wants to see the content that they want on the device they want, on the medium that they want and that they like. And so it's finding ways to continue to deliver content that then will eventually lead to the connection, which will lead to commerce. And I think that's kind of the chain that I try to follow. I mean, content is king, and I know that gets overused, but it's truly the case. When, you know, when we look at launching, you know, we have a flash marketplace for our seats, and we're talking about different ways to promote our secondary opportunity. And so what we do is we create little content pieces around it, because, you know, it's a rather utilitarian service that we offer, but why not make it fun? Why not make it something compelling that people will want to watch and throw a couple players in there and make it fun? And, you know, there's ways to deliver the message, and then it's finding the right mediums to push them out. You know, it's everybody is obviously gone mobile in different ways, but they're on, you know, you can't be speaking to them the same way on Instagram as as you do on Twitch and different distribution platforms. So it's important to cater to the audiences in a different way and not be just communicating the same thing across all. And so for me, it's still remaining focused on content. You know, I've definitely dabbled in the AR space and the VR space, and we're looking at artificial intelligence, and we've got some really unique ideas there. But and I always like being the beta on things like that. I just want to make sure that if we do it, we're not doing it just to do it, but we're doing it to grow the brand and to generate revenue.
Well, as a content guy who's been in the industry for 20 years, I'm glad to hear you say that there's still a future in it. That makes me feel very secure for my livelihood, which is great.
That's good.
Brian, I know you're a super busy guy. You're in season. I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast, telling us a little bit more about your career and where things are heading in the marketing world. So thank you so much for jumping on and giving us a moment of your time.
For sure. Thanks for having me, Brian.
I want to give a special thanks to the Golden Knights and their organization and Brian Killingsworth for being so transparent. You know, when I first approached Brian about being on the show, he was excited. He was interested. They want to share. They want to talk about what they've accomplished, what they've done, their ideas, their successes, how they built their team. And I love that transparency. There are so many teams and organizations out there that hold their organizational decision making like it's a state secret, you know, like the CIA or Fort Knox, or it's under lock and key. And I can appreciate where they come from. I can. But it's great when you come across an organization that wants to share and help others by letting them learn and see the inside of how they operate. And so I really appreciate the Vegas Golden Knights giving Brian Killingsworth the green light to come on the show and share what he's done to create such a great vibe and buzz around the Vegas Golden Knights. We have a lot of great interviews coming up in the next couple weeks, so please make sure you keep listening, downloading, sharing with your friends, and putting out reviews out there so that we can continue to build this podcast week over week, month over month, and just get more of you enjoying the show. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening.